Golf Smarter number 297, published on September 7, 2011, is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter.
Smarterpodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
Around the world in 80 rounds with David Wood.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, David.
Hello, Fred.
How are you?
All is well here in New York City.
New York City, just like I pictured it. And you just recently moved there?
Yes, I've long wanted to live in New York City. Most of my adult life I lived in L.A. when I was a comedian and a comedy writer, and then I moved to Seattle for about 15 years. And it kind of came up that opportunity to live here happened, and I jumped at it and got a place on the Upper East Side. And you know, my agent is here, my literary agent, and my publisher, St. Martin's Press. So it seemed like a natural move, and here I am.
And now you're a stand-up comic and a writer, or what is your main focus these days?
Mostly, it's writing and speaking. I was a stand-up comedian for about 20 years. And I kind of got tired of it and moved to Seattle.
That's
got to
be a tough life.
It was fun. You know, I was lucky in that I did a bunch of David Letterman shows.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
In the mid-80s, and Diana Ross saw me on the Letterman show. So, you know, I started making a really good living. I didn't become a star, but I made a good living for my 20 years in stand-up.
Wow.
And I got tired of it, and I always loved Seattle. So I moved to Seattle, and I started a video production company making funny corporate training films that starred Harry Anderson, who was a friend of mine. He was the judge on Night Court.
And a magician. He's more known as a sleight of hand comic, right?
Yeah, and he's fantastic. He does comedy magic, and we had performed a lot together, and I asked him if he wanted to star in these films, and he did it as a favor to me. And I did that for about 10 years, and then, you know, I'm not much of a businessman. I'm more creative. And I'm a golfer. And one day I was sitting at home looking for something new to do. I'd sold that business. And I thought, where's the southernmost golf course in the world? And I had no idea. I did a search on the computer. It turns out it's Ushuaia, Argentina, the very southern tip of South America. And I thought, where's the northernmost? Again, no idea. Did a search.
What made
Trump's
you think?
Norway.
What made you think, what's the southern? I mean, how did that come up?
Well, I've been going to St. Andrews, Scotland every year traveling, and I've always said in lieu of having a well-funded retirement plan, I've played the old course 40 times. I'll be eating cat food in my 70s.
But you can die happy, right?
Right, I'll have those memories. And I love links golf, and I love golf in exotic places.
Oh, neat.
And it just popped into my head. I really have no clue where the idea came from. And so I found out the southernmost and the northernmost, and then I thought, that'd be kind of a cool trip. What if some idiot was to travel from the southernmost to the northernmost golf courses?
Did you know any idiots like that?
I did. I knew one very well, myself. You know, and I'm one of these people that once I have an idea like this, I have to do it. It doesn't make for sound financial planning, but it's the way I roll.
I got to imagine that many comedians all suffer from this impulsivity that they can't control because they're not medicated they're not medicated for that.
That's right. You know, I mean, I dropped out of law school to become a comedian. So,
oh, my gosh. Parents must have loved that.
Oh, yes. My mother was very, very proud.
Oh, yeah. She was telling everyone, yeah, my son, who's going to become a lawyer, went to go to be a comedian.
Yeah, I actually was successful. I know. I got successful quick enough that she wasn't worried too long, but she was a little concerned about her oldest child.
Yeah.
And anyway, I have.
Oh, wow, you're the oldest? How many siblings do you have?
I have a younger brother and younger sister. And,
oh, my gosh. That's something that sounds like the youngest child would do, not the oldest one.
Well, my family, I was raised by my mother grew up in San Francisco, and I was raised by a single parent, and she was kind of a unique, how everybody says their mom is unique? Well, mine was. And we grew up very liberal and very, you know, we moved a lot because we were always one step ahead of bill collectors. Mm-hmm. But it kind of made us all unique individuals. And we all have, the three kids have taken, you know, kind of unique career paths. And so, my upbringing, I look at it as a huge asset. And it made me not want to do anything normal. And so it was really a blessing in disguise how much we struggled. But, you know, but my mom always knew food, and she was a reader. And so we grew up, you know, for having no money, we grew up knowing about lots of things. And it was a really cool thing. And, you know, she passed away in 83. But, she was just, really a unique individual.
Oh, that's nice.
So anyway, it really made for, you know, and that's kind of what I've always done. And then, you know, so I have this crazy idea to travel around the world, you know, from the southernmost to the northernmost golf courses. And I'm thinking, how would I fund this? And I only had one asset, which is I had a condominium on Lake Washington in Seattle. And so literally within 30 days of having this idea, I sold my condo. I put all my furniture that I wanted to keep in storage. I got vaccinated against every disease known to man. And I put 10 golf clubs in a golf bag with three shirts, two pair of pants, three pair of travel underwear, one black sweater for dressy occasions, and I took off.
I can't. I excuse me for making any assumptions, but I can't imagine that you were sharing this condo with any partner.
Were you by yourself? I'm a single guy. I have long been a single guy, and so, you know, I didn't have any. You know, I wasn't like abandoning kids or a wife or anything. So there wasn't any of that.
No, nobody with a wife would have gone. Sure, go ahead, have fun.
Right. And you know, it's funny. My friends held the first annual David Wood Memorial Golf Tournament, and I'm very proud to say there was not a second one. So I lived. You know, so that's the ending of the book. I don't want to give it away, but I do live.
Oh, good. So, thank you. Well, you're living to tell about it right now.
Absolutely.
So what happened? Where'd you go?
Well, I left the end of August, and I wanted to get to the bottom of South America when it was just the start of spring.
Okay.
In the southern hemisphere. And then that was my only plan, was I wanted it to be summertime about a year later when I ended up at the top of Norway, about 15 degrees above the Arctic Circle. And so that was basically my only plan. I really decided to wing it, and I wanted to travel and see the world. And, you know, I'm a travel writer, reader, and Paul Theroux is my absolute hero. And I always wanted to take trips like Paul Theroux, but, you know, I kind of wanted to play golf once in a while. And that's what I did. So I made my way down to by every conveyance possible down to the southern tip of South America, which is not that easy to get to. I mean, I took three plane rides. I took two overnight buses. I took a ship from Portamont to Punta Arenas, which has the largest hole in the ozone hovering over this place in the archipelagos of southern Chile.
It must be easy to putt into.
No. I had so much sunscreen on, I looked like Edgar Winter when I was like out there. But
for anybody who didn't live in the 70s, Edgar Winter was a rock and roller, an albino rock and roller.
That's right. Who's on a TV commercial. I just saw him in a TV commercial.
Oh, you're kidding. The other day.
No, it's funny to see him. But and then again from there. There you go.
Frankenstein.
Very good.
I was
very
a disc
good.
Jockey those days. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Very good. No worries. And so then I took a 15-hour bus ride down through Tierra del Fuego to Ushuaia, Argentina, the very southern tip of South America, and the world's southernmost golf course, which is, and it was snowing. And
oh,
so
wow.
I kind of had to wait a few days for the snow to thaw. And then I went out to the golf course. It wasn't even open, so I climbed over the fence, and there was a golf lover who is from Buenos Aires who had resettled down in Ushuaia, which is a very beautiful town, by the way. It's in the Fujian Andes are down there. It's very beautiful, and it's the Beagle Channel where Charles Darwin went through there on some of his trips. And he wanted to play golf. He had kind of been jonesing to play golf, I could tell, after a tough winter. And so we both climbed over the fence, and He didn't speak English, and my Spanish is terrible, but we had an absolute blast playing golf. And there's still some snow on the ground here and there, but it was really fun. It was a perfect way to start this adventure.
Yeah, and how was the golf course? I mean, other than the snow. I mean, I've lost balls in water. I've lost balls in tall grass. But losing a ball in the snow would be difficult because you're just not going to find it. Right.
Right. You know, it's real funny. I'm a real purist in golf. You know, I like, you know, blade clubs, and I like, you know, Titleist golf balls. And he pulled out an orange ball, this orange ball in the first half. I've never been so jealous of an orange golf ball.
Yeah, good idea. Oh, that's really smart. So how was the course?
The course was only okay. It's more of the setting. You know, I did play a lot of big-name courses on the trip, but I wanted to play places like this. I wanted to play public courses where idiots like me would play.
Well, and you know, I've often had this theory, and actually I have had the opportunity to do a couple of adventures with some of the listeners of Golf Smarter. And a couple years ago, we went to Prague. This year we went to Scottsdale, and I've always believed that golfers love to brag about where they've been and where they've played. They love to sit around and say, hey, have you ever played here? And I'm just hoping that we can go through your book and I can say, I've played there, but I have a feeling it's going to be if I get to do any of that. But yeah, I just think that it doesn't matter how good the course was, I played there, right?
That's right. You know, and golf is golf. You know, I've been lucky, I've played a large number of the best golf courses on earth. I've been very fortunate. But I tell you what, I love municipal golf. I love the fact that strangers can meet on the first tee of a muni golf course, be put together, and you become friends. I can't tell you how many of my friends, almost all my friends, are people who I met on the first tee of a golf course.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about municipal golf and public golf. You know, you go to country clubs, again, and I get to play at lots of country clubs because I speak and I was a comedian and I'd always get invited to play nice places.
Sweet.
And I'm always so amazed at how uptight they are, and they don't seem like there's an atmosphere of fun. And this always perplexed me. But give me a great muni. And by the way, you know, it's like the old course of St. Andrews is a muni. You know, it's the ultimate muni golf course. It's
sure
built for the people of the town. And that, to me, is what makes golf great. So
I couldn't agree with you more. And I could not. I love walking onto a golf course by myself and just meeting people and playing with people. I you know, country club golf to me, you shouldn't be allowed to have a handicap because you're just playing the same course over and over again.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, I'm a nine. Yeah, well, if you went over to my course with bad greens and you've never played before, I bet you couldn't break 100.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. Yeah. I just don't like the attitude. I just cannot figure out why. Why if you even, okay, let's just say you're a rich person and you decide to join this place, why wouldn't you just make the rules fun? You know, you can still have rules that you want people to maybe not wear, you know, play barefoot, you know, or shirt. I mean, you can have rules. I understand that. But why wouldn't you make it a fun atmosphere? And I have never understood that.
I think that's part of the, oh boy, we're going to go into a deep rabbit hole here. I think that's part of the issue with why golf is not thriving at this point is because of their old school mentality, their old boy mentality, you know, old boy network type mentality that is not necessarily conducive to the future of the game.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, like you go to Scotland and Ireland. Now some of the Scottish clubs, I mean, they do have strange rules for women. Women can't be in this bar, for example. But for the most part, you go to these community golf courses in Scotland and Ireland, and they're just teeming with kids. They're teeming with women playing,
really?
With men, and it's that is just fantastic. They're almost community centers. Many times in Ireland, you go to a little town in Ireland, and the golf course has the best restaurant in town. Ooh. I mean, and it's not a fancy restaurant, but it's known as the best restaurant, and that's kind of where people hang out. And I just think there should be more of that as opposed to. And by the way, I'm also a walker. I'm not a golf cart person, and I don't really care what other people do. I mean, especially if you have medical problems. But to me, it's a game that's to be walked, and I view golf like it's basketball. I'm playing a sport. I like to carry my bag. I like to sweat. I like to fret about it. I like to talk. I like to laugh. But to me, it's like playing basketball. It's not this like, it's become this like thing, you know, where people are having a picnic while they play, and they bring coolers, and you know, to me, I want to play the sport, and so I've always treated it that way, and so I think it should be more like that, more inclusive, more welcoming, because it's just a game.
Well, you know, for my 2 cents psychology on you, buddy, you're a masochist. That and the fact that you were a stand-up comedian, those are two. You subject yourself to some pretty painful.
Well, I've never taken the easy path.
No, obviously not.
No.
You know, during this conversation, I'm going to probably throw you a couple softballs, but this is the fattest one I'm going to lay up right in front of you here.
Because
I'm going to break right now, because this episode of Golf Smarter is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and feature audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. Now, for Golf Smarter listeners who've yet to give Audible a try, please, they and I would like you to give them, they want to give you a free audiobook so that you can check out for yourself, especially as a podcast listener, so we already know you like this kind of content. But see for yourself, hear for yourself how great the experience of reading an audiobook can be. And just go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter and choose any audiobook from their vast library of over 75,000 titles. And David, here's the softball. What's your favorite audiobook, David?
Well, I would have to say it's Around the World in 80 Rounds by David Wood.
So. Oh, my gosh. No, is that really true? You have your own audiobook?
I do have my own audiobook. I was the narrator. I was
really?
I did it through Brilliance Audio in Michigan, and it was one of the coolest things I've ever done. It was very challenging.
Well, I prefer audiobooks, and I just finished two, and I'll talk about those on later episodes. But I prefer audiobooks that are read by the author. There's so much more that comes into the story, and there are great actors who do audiobooks. There's no question about it, but they're acting. But when you have a biography or a story that is written by the author, there's just something more to it that you get out of it. Tell me about that experience.
Well, it was you know, my agent called me and said that Brilliance Audio, who's number one in this field, wanted me to do it. I said, well, that'd be great. And so you fly to Michigan, Grand Haven, Michigan, which is this beautiful town, and you know, they put you in a booth and you have your manuscript in front of you, and when you have a manuscript that's in type pages, it's quite thick. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at this thing going, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to read this thing.
Out loud.
And then yes, exactly. And, you know, and there's two guys in a sound booth and you got headphones on and they just, you know, they point at you to go and you're going, oh my word.
Really?
And then I'm kicking myself for all the, because, you know, I was in South America to start the trip, and I put in all these Spanish phrases to be cool, and I'm kicking myself for all these incredible Spanish phrases I put in, which I think I'm going to butcher. But once you get the hang of it, it took me a day to get the hang of it, and once you get going, it's one of the most challenging and fun things I've ever done. And by the way, we did this 8 hours a day for 5 days.
Oh, my God, and your voice held up?
It did. I mean, I was tired at the end of it.
Sure.
But what they did, a smart thing, is I was not getting it at first, but they turned the volume up in my headphones way up. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you started to perform it because you could hear yourself so much better.
Right.
And that was a great trick that the director did. And I absolutely loved it. And I have nothing but respect for people who do that. I mean, it's really an art, and again, it was, again, I just, it was one of the best things I've ever done.
Did you have to go through any rewrites and talking about where, you know, in the book itself, and I'm holding a copy of the paperback, which is 282 pages, where you talk about my book, and all of a sudden you're reading, you go, wait a minute, I need to say my audiobook or this audiobook? Did you, were there any changes you had to make, or you just read it straight as you wrote it?
We read it straight through.
Uh-huh. So
there was no changes whatsoever.
And were there times where they, as you were reading it, they went, you know what, let's do take two on that because I didn't get what you were saying? Or did they
all the time. I mean, they have this brilliant thing called real-time editing. And so, you know, and I screwed up a lot. And I got to where, and they say that even the best people at this only can do about a page or two without making a mistake.
Sure.
And I got to where I could do about a page and a half. And what happens is they just have real-time editing. So they stop you right there. We'll pick it up right here. Bam. So basically it's that quick as you go.
Yeah.
And, oh, yeah, I screwed up. I screwed up all the time. But I did get way, way better. And by the final day, I mean, I was really proud of myself that I could go through huge passages. And I loved it.
So they would basically say, okay, back up a sentence and start again. And when right where they got to the point before you made a mistake, they would just hit record and you'd be keep going and you wouldn't even know,
yeah,
right?
That's right. It's really brilliant how the system works.
I was for about 3+ years, I was John Madden's recording engineer.
Oh, wow.
And he would come into the studio where I was working at a radio station, and he had these 2-3 minute pieces that he did for the RKO radio network. And so he and I got into this rhythm where that's what I would do with him. If he made a mistake, I'd say, just back it up a line, and boom. He read the line exactly the same way each time. And if he made a mistake, you could never tell. And we were doing that little punch in. Just like that, punch it into record. He was awesome with that. So I know, cool. I know what you're talking about. And once you get the rhythm of it, and you know, the engineer understands your pacing. It's a great way to go.
Yeah, and again, the director was just so brilliant in how he realized that I was not hearing myself, and he. Mm-hmm. I think they were looking. You know, I think initially they thought, "Oh my word, this guy's not going to be able to get through this."
Wow.
But. Having those headphones turned way up, and all of a sudden you can hear the inflections in your voice as you do it, and you start shading the words, and that just made it. It was really a lifesaver.
And so, how long did it take you to do the book?
It took a full week. It took five solid
days
of basically
8 hours a day.
I would say 8:30 to 5.
Wow.
And
wow,
I'd go back to the hotel and just be, you know. Spent. I couldn't. Didn't want to talk to anybody. But you know, I wanted it to be good. I mean, this whole project is so, as you know from your stuff, it's so personal.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, it's so funny. You know, I'll tell you a story. I mean, I hope I'm not, you know, I didn't have an agent for this or anything. I didn't even have a book deal. I just decided to do it, and I figured maybe it'll work out afterwards. So. I came back after traveling for a year, and I didn't have a place to live, and my brother lived on the Monterey Peninsula, so I had about half of my money left from the equity of my condo, and I basically just decided to write the book. I said, I'm just going to be true to this, and again, no deal, no nothing, and I sat there for a year and wrote the book every day, religiously, every day. I just sat, and meanwhile, my bank account is just free-falling. I thought I could, like, you know, I'm a professional speaker and had been a comedian, so I thought I would speak while I was writing, but for some reason I just wanted to be true to the writing. And so when I had written the manuscript, I thought, you know, this is pretty good. I should get an agent, which, again, I hadn't even thought of this. And so I bought a book. This is how naive I am. I bought a book, this large book that has all the agencies and publishing houses in it, and I just went through it. And for some reason, they listed the hobbies of the people who own these agencies. And I just said, oh, I'll look for one with golf. And so I was going through it, and there's one with golf, this lady named Jane Dystal, who, by the way, was Barack Obama's literary agent.
Hmm.
So, and I had the manuscript done, and again, it helped to be a little dumb and
yeah,
just
absolutely.
Not play by the rules. So I sent her an email. I said, hey, I'm a former comedian. I have been on the David Letterman show. I've written a book called Around the World, Made Rounds.
Don't forget Diana Ross. Diana Ross. Are you...
I didn't put that in. So anyway.
You did earlier.
Yeah, well, I know, but she emails me right back and says, I'd like to see something. So I didn't even know. Okay. I sent her a 2-page treatment that I had written up. She goes, what else you got? I said, I'll send you 3 chapters. So I sent 3 chapters. And she calls me back and says, I want to represent it.
Oh, that's great.
It helped to be dumb.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Well, I want to get back to that, but I do have to say before we, this is the longest commercial I've ever done for Audible.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Hey, you think they're going to complain? So there you go. There's our recommendation this week for your Audible podcast, your Audible book, and that would be Around the World in 80 Rounds by David Wood, today's guest. And all you have to do to get it for free... Oh, sorry, David. You're not going to get.
That's all right.
Okay,
all
fine.
Right.
But you'll become an Audible.
We've done an infomercial.
Yeah, right. So you'll become an Audible. You'll become hooked on Audible. So get your free audiobook of your choice, and we choose today. Around the World in 80 Rounds by David Wood. Just go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter, AUDIBLE, audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. So where'd you go? So now I want to go back to the book. Now where'd you go? I want to go because I want to start getting places.
I decided to travel west. I decided to follow the sun, in essence, and
smart.
I kind of had a general plan. So I went from South America, then I went to New Zealand, where I tried to vary up the travel. And I wanted to travel overland as much as possible.
Okay.
And I just didn't want to fly around. I mean, I did fly over over oceans, but... I went from South America to New Zealand, where I rented a camper van and went from north to south, all the way from the northern tip at Kataya and 90 Mile Beach, all the way to Stewart Island, which is the little dot under the two islands. Went there and went to Australia, where I took the train across the outback from the Indian Pacific from one ocean to the other, which was one of the great things I've ever done. Then I went to Southeast Asia and took trains up the Malay Peninsula from Singapore up into Thailand. I went to Laos.
Oh, wait. Where'd you play in Thailand?
I played at the first place I played, which was great, was Blue Canyon, which is in Phuket, which is...
I played there.
There we go.
We actually, in the archives of Golf Smarter, I interviewed the general manager, the head pro of Blue
Wonderful.
Canyon Country Club. So, yes.
Wonderful.
Oh, goody. Okay, we're done.
Keep going. And you know what happened was that I decided to take all offers, which is not my way. And I, you know, anytime anybody suggested something, I would go.
Sure.
I was in Perth at this place called Joondalup, which is a Robert Trent Jones course near Perth. And I had lunch with the general manager, and he was kind of a traveler. And he said, where are you going next? I said, I think I'm going to go to Singapore. He goes, hey, I know somebody in Singapore. We have a sister club there. Let me call ahead. Did that. Went to Singapore. The guy says, where are you going next? I said, I think I'm going to take a train up the Malay Peninsula into Thailand. He goes, well, I'll call ahead to Blue Canyon. The guy at Blue Canyon called ahead to Mission Hills in China, which is the world's largest golf resort. You know, and I'm playing there, and I'm playing with a guy who's a golf course photographer. And he said, are you going to Spring City, which is in Kunming, China? I said, no, I can't go. I have to get to India before it's too hot. He said, no, you have to go to Spring City. He pulled out a telephone, and next thing you know, the next day I'm going to Spring City. So I just let it take me, and it was
that's
far
awesome.
Better than if I would have planned it.
Yeah. Amazing. Oh, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, I was lucky. I was also lucky that bad things kept happening to me, which, you know, nobody wants to read about, you know, what a wonderful trip somebody's having. So, you know, that's what postcards are for. You know, I was lucky in that, you know, I went over the Andes at 16,000 feet on a one-lane dirt road on a bus, and I got severe, severe altitude sickness.
Wow.
You know, I got terribly sick in India. I got so sick in India from food poisoning that I went to Nepal, even though there were 2 civil wars. I just didn't care. I just wanted to get out of India. And, you know, there's bombs going off every day in Kathmandu. You know, I got arrested going into Ukraine, and where I was held overnight by armed guards because I didn't have a visa to go across Ukraine. So, you know, again, I was fortunate in that periodically some tough things were happening to me, which, you know, makes a travel account a lot more fun to read.
Yeah, but if you were my child, I'd be, get home right now.
Well, I know. And by the way, if you want to lose weight, go to India, eat anything anywhere, and watch the pounds fly away.
Really?
It's like one big Jenny Craig center, I swear to God.
I've heard people who've gone to India and said that the beginning of the trip in India, like kids who went to away for the semester and stuff, is how difficult it is to make the adjustment. But once you're there, it's an amazing place, but
it's a
very difficult place to adjust to.
Oh, nothing like it.
Wow. So over those 80 rounds, how'd you score quickly? Did you keep your handicap, or you did not even pay attention to it?
I didn't pay attention at all.
Really?
You know, I had some low rounds in the low 70s. I just wanted to play golf and to meet people and have fun. And I didn't play that well. You know, I can be a fairly good golfer at times. I've been as low as a 4 handicap.
Wow.
But I actually struggled for the most part because I wasn't practicing, and I was much more into the travel. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes the golf actually, you know, I mean, what kind of an idiot takes, you know, I'm pretty sure I'm the only guy taking golf clubs over the Andes. You know what I mean? So, you know, I started to curse those golf clubs at times, but I did have some low rounds in there. I mean, I played Menahaus, which is right next to the Great Pyramid of Giza. And again, nobody out there listening to you wants to hear about a guy playing well. But I birdied under the Great Pyramid of Giza, which is like 300 yards away. I birdied the first 6 holes in a row. And I'm thinking, great, the only place in the world I can play good is under a Great Pyramid. So it's going to make my options very limited.
Yeah.
So, but mostly I didn't play that well, but I just wanted to be social and play and meet people. And, you know, I did have a number of good rounds, don't get me wrong, but for the most part, I didn't play as well as I usually do.
Well, obviously you had some amazing adventures and some great stories, and it's all here in the book called Around the World in 80 Rounds. And it's David Wood. David, where can we, other than Audible, thank you very much for making that available, but where else can we find the book?
Well, probably the easiest way to buy the hardback, the paperback, the Kindle version, or the audio version, in addition to Audible, is Amazon.com.
Actually, if you're on Amazon and you buy the audio version, it goes right to Audible because Amazon owns Audible.
Oh, perfect.
There you go. There you go. So, yeah, Amazon, it's on Amazon?
Yes, it is.
Great. And if the Golf Smarter listener who's paying attention right now and has missed this announcement, we no longer offer Amazon books on golfsmarter.com and our Golfers Mart because Amazon has pulled out of California. And so I cannot offer that. But I can send you to Amazon if you want to buy this book. Great stories about David's adventures around the world in 80 rounds. Dave, thanks so much for coming to the Golf Smarter podcast. I enjoyed hearing it, and hopefully if you get to the Bay Area, we'll get to play together.
Hey, thanks, man. I really, really appreciate it.
Speaking of books, Tony Manzoni wanted me to thank the Golf Smarter community for their overwhelming support and feedback for his book, The Lost Fundamental, One Simple Move, Better Golf Forever. We are the exclusive distributor of the book, so pick your copy up today at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.